Okay, we got, are we recording this? Yeah.
Want me to turn it off?
No, that's fine. We have present Senator Stedman, Senator Wagner, Senator Elton, and I think Senator Hoffman is on his way, and myself, Senator Cowdery. And now we got to, some of us has to leave at 3:30, so we better get started on this thing. So Greg, take off.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for number one, for your leadership of this committee and for the work that you've done for many, many years to support international trade and our international trade economy here in Alaska. And I thank all of you who serve on this committee. It's a very important part of the economy, as I'll present here in a few minutes, and your work is valuable, and we appreciate all of you and your efforts in this area. With your permission, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make a presentation. I think most of you know that international trade is indeed a big business for Alaska. Annual worldwide exports for the year that's just come to an end, 2006, are anticipated to top $4 billion. This is a record export total. We have the numbers January through November, which is $3.9 billion, and we're confident that when December is added, we'll top $4 billion for the first time. Those final numbers will come out here in a few weeks, but it was a very good year for trade last year. What does $4 billion mean in terms of the overall Alaska economy? The overall Alaska economy, the gross state product, which is a sum of all goods and services produced in a year in a given state, it's the equivalent of a nation's GDP. When we talk about states, we talk about the gross state product. The Alaskan gross state product is currently at about $40 billion. And so exports at $4 billion represents about 10% of the economic output of this state. And keep in mind that when we the numbers that I'm going to be presenting here only address the export of commodities, goods, does not take into account the exports of services, contracts that people might have for environmental services, for oil and gas field services, construction, engineering, architecture. Those numbers are not available to us or anyone else. We've estimated what Alaska does in that area, and I'll talk about that, but keep in mind that unlike the exports of commodities, where there's quite a bit of paperwork, export certifications and whatnot, customs records and all that, when a company signs a contract to design a bridge somewhere, we usually find out about that anecdotally. Either they announce it themselves in their annual report, or it's in the media, or just in our work with them, we hear about it. So the numbers that we're talking about represent the export of actual goods and commodities. $4 billion, 10% of our economy. Importantly, and I'm not an economist, but I do remember from Econ 101 that when new money comes into an economic system from the outside, that's a good thing. It's not me handing you a dollar and you handing me the dollar back. This is new money coming from the outside into our economy, $4 billion. Export industries are responsible for thousands of direct and indirect jobs in Alaska. Obviously, the direct jobs are those people who are working in those industries, the miners, the people working the fishing boats, the people working in the fertilizer plant, the Kenai, or people working in those areas. Those are the direct workers. The indirect workers are those who are, provide services to those. For example, in transportation, freight forwarders, customs brokers, insurance, accounting lawyers, those types. But when you consider the direct and indirect, it literally is thousands of jobs statewide. The results of all this for Alaska is a stronger and more diversified economy. I mentioned some of the important reasons why trade matters to us and why we should be concerned and interested in this. It's a substantial component of the economy, about 10%. And I remind all of us here that this does not include the export of services. $4 billion of new money into our economy. Export jobs, by the way, the U.S. Department of Commerce did a study a few years back, and their study indicated that jobs related to export typically pay 13 to 16% more than jobs that are tied solely to the domestic economy. And I think when we look around Alaska, there's ample evidence that the higher paying jobs in our state tend to be those that are involved in industries that are export related. Again, miners' jobs, people working at the LNG export station, people working in seafood and other industries. These tend to be the higher paying jobs in our economy. Another important aspect for trade for Alaska is that it allows our companies to become larger through expanded markets and customer base. Alaska, although large geographically, as we all know, has a small population, say 700,000 people. For a company to grow above a certain size at some point in their life cycle, once they've sort of reached a certain point of doing business within Alaska, they may need to go beyond the borders of Alaska. They have some choices. They can go to the lower 48. Some do. Or they may want to go overseas. And for some companies, depending on their particular product or their particular service, indeed their best opportunities may be found overseas. How does Alaska rank vis-a-vis the rest of the country? We feel that Alaska is one of the most trade-oriented states in America. In absolute terms, using the 2005 total for the whole year, which was $3.6 billion, Alaska ranks 40th among the states. But when you look at that based upon our population, on a per capita basis, we rank fourth in the nation. And when you look at it as a percentage of our total economic output, we rank eighth in the nation. What this tells me is that for us as individual Alaskans, trade is relatively more important to us than for people living in other states where they have a lot of other things going on, big manufacturing bases, big agricultural industries and whatnot. But for us, we're a trading state. It means a lot to us. I also wanted to talk, this isn't trade per se, but it's an important dimension to our international economy here in Alaska, and that's the investments that overseas companies have made here. This is investments in fixed assets. This is mines, this is pipelines, this is buildings, this is hotels, this is physical infrastructure. When we look at that, it's now at about $36 billion cumulative over the years up until now. It's about $36 billion, 20 of which can be found on the North Slope. 20 plus billion can be found on the North Slope, the investment there by BP, for example. This ranks Alaska 12th in attracting overseas investment. I think this is important because the companies that are involved in this tend to be the big multinational companies, whether they're in mining or oil and gas or seafood, whatever they may be in. The fact is, they do business all over the world. They can do business anywhere they want. And the fact that they choose to invest here, I think, is a very positive message about Alaska. It's a positive message about our business climate, that they feel they can come here and conduct their business in a profitable way. I think it's a vote of confidence in our workforce, that they feel that they can come here, establish business operations, and either find the people who are already here to work in those operations, or that Alaska is such that they can attract the people they need to work in those industries. So foreign direct investment is also another important aspect of our international economy. Looking back at last year, the year that just concluded, 2006, I mentioned we anticipate the exports, when it's all added up, will total $4 billion. That's up 12% from last year, the year before, 2005. That would mark the fourth consecutive year of double-digit export growth. Other highlights of the year, mineral exports doubled. Now, I don't believe that the quantities exported doubled, but the value, the prices realized for those minerals, it was much higher than the year before. If you look at zinc doubled in price from 05 to 06. And in other categories, mineral prices have had a good run. That's starting to taper off now. But in 06, what was exported, our exporters got good prices for. I indicate that this increase is driven primarily by higher prices. Also, among our major markets, China continues to be the headline story. Exports to China last year increased by 41%, and I'll have more on this in a minute. Another highlight was our Korean exports. Our exports to Korea, are traditionally our second largest trading partner, reached an all-time high, $700 million last year. This gives you a historical perspective looking back over the past decade, actually 13 years, and you can see that over that period of time, we were basically in about a $2.5 billion range worldwide, the exception being 1998. I think you would remember that reflects the impact of the Asian economic crisis in 1997, started in Thailand in July. It was a currency crisis that spread out, and it hit some of our markets, particularly Korea, hard. And so our exports that year, as they did to other Western states that do a lot of business with Asia and to countries that do a lot of business with Asia, it dropped. We took a three-quarters of a billion-dollar hit that year. But fortunately, we recovered, as Korea recovered primarily, the next year. You can see, though, starting in about 2003, we've started this 4 years in a row of double-digit growth. A lot of that can be attributed to increased demand for natural resources out of emerging economies like China, India. Their demand is driving prices up, and we're getting higher values for what we export overseas because of it. So what do we export? Seafood has been and remains our largest export commodity. It's about half. It's about half of what we export, 50%. Minerals, and this is mainly zinc and lead, and this is mainly Red Dog, account for about 26%. The energy category is a combination. It's a basket of LNG, of coal, and of refined fuel products. There's no crude in that. We don't export any crude overseas. So what that is the LNG going to Japan, the coal going to Korea and now to South America, and the refined fuel products, which go to a variety of countries. Refined fuel products are things like naphtha, some of those type of refined fuels. Fertilizers are from the Agrium plant on the Kenai Peninsula. You can see that's grown over the years to be a pretty large category. Now, that number will drop next year as production has been curtailed there at that plant as they look for alternative feedstocks besides the natural gas that they've been using. Forest products, that number has declined over the years, but we are still shipping forest products, primarily round logs. Logs, for example, being shipped to Korea or China, where they're then processed. And then precious metals, where it says stones and metals. That's gold, silver. In that category, like in the minerals, we enjoyed higher prices. Gold prices have stayed relatively high, above, you know, $600. And we've had increased production. I think it was in January of last year that Pogo came on. They poured their first gold. So there's been a little bit, probably a combination there of a little bit more output, but as well as higher prices. This just shows you the same information. What you saw was percentages. This shows you the dollars. You can see how important the seafood exports are, and you can see how much the mineral exports have grown year on year from 2005 to 2006. Again, this is more a function of increased prices being realized rather than a big increase in output. Who do we export to? This has changed somewhat over the past 10 years, although the leaders haven't changed much. Japan has been and remains our number one trading partner. If I had done this presentation for you, I might have actually, 10 years ago or even 5 years ago, the number for Japan would have been much higher. 10 years ago, it represented about 50%. Today, you can see we're more diversified as this reflects the economic downturn, the so-called lost decade in Japan, following the bursting of their bubble economy. Our exports have declined to Japan. The reason why our overall numbers, though, are larger is because of growth in these other markets. Predominantly, we've had steady and impressive growth from Korea. Now, has been and still is our second largest partner, but it now accounts for 17%. China has grown immensely over the past 5 or 6 years. In 2005, for the first time in our history, China surpassed Canada to become our third largest export market. Canada is now our fourth largest. And then you see some European countries there, Germany, for example, Switzerland. Unlike the Asian markets or even Canada, the Europe markets tend to be more one-dimensional customers. What I mean by that is there's like one commodity that they buy from Alaska. Take Switzerland, for example. Almost 100% of what they buy from us is precious metals. Or if you took a Belgium, almost 100% of what they're buying from us is zinc, zinc and lead. So in those cases, there's something that they're buying from us, but it's not a basket of commodities as is typical of the Asian markets. One reason I should point out that our exports are concentrated as they are in the Pacific Rim, and particularly in Asia. I think there's three reasons for that. First and foremost is that we have what they need. Some of those countries, when you think about it, have little in the way of natural resources. Japan, for example, outside of its nuclear production of energy, has to import virtually 100% of its energy, whether it's coal or LNG or whatever it may be, oil, crude oil. That all has to be imported. So in some of these markets, they completely lack the resource, or in the case of a China, which up until 10 years ago was an exporter of oil and is now an importer of oil, they just simply don't have enough to keep up with their economy and with their growing populations. and rising expectations of their citizens. So there is a reason for this concentration. We have what they want. We also have geographic proximity. Sometimes we forget we're part of the Pacific Rim. When you talk about the Pacific Rim, we should be talking about Alaska as well. We're right there with them, and there are established shipping lanes, whether it's by sea or by air, between Alaska and these markets. And thirdly, and often overlooked, particularly for countries that are dependent on imports for important things like energy and food, the fact that we're part of the United States offers them a stability which they don't find sometimes in other countries that have political upheavals and coups and all sorts of different things that can go on. There's some comfort at the end of the day in places like Japan or Korea that they're buying from Alaska, because they know we'll also be selling to them tomorrow and the day after tomorrow and the day after that. This shows you just the dollar amounts. You can see it reflected. Japan, in spite of the economic difficulties, still our number one customer at well over $1 billion a year. Korea now has reached a record high of $700 million. China is at 469. In 2001, our total exports to China were $100 million. So in five short years, it has quadrupled. And now we're at $470 million. So it's among the major growth markets, our major export markets. This is really unprecedented. I've been in this business for 18 years, and I haven't seen that type of rapid growth from any major market during that time. This just shows you just a three-year look for the periods, the 11-month period, January through November, the numbers that we have 06 for. You can see even there, the arrow is going up. It's very positive, and it's going up year by year. We anticipate the growth of our exports to China to continue at least for the next several years. That's about as far out as we can see, you know, with any predictability. And that's driven by a couple of things. Most of you know that the Olympics, the Summer Olympics, will be hosted by Beijing in the summer of 2008, and they have been on a massive building and rebuilding spree for the past 4 or 5 years. If you're over in China these days, it's going on 24 hours a day, getting ready, not only for the host city, not just Beijing, but the other cities where there's going to be an influx of tourism, media attention. This will be really a coming out party to show the world the new China, and they are putting a fresh coat of paint and rebuilding almost anything you can think of, whether it's a tourist site, whether it's a factory, new roads, new water and sewer, new telecommunications. It's like a country being reborn and rebuilt. It's quite dramatic. I think I read that something like 40% or more of the world's construction cranes are now deployed in China. So if you're having trouble getting one, that's where it is. It's really quite phenomenal what we're seeing. Now, this will go on through the Olympics. And then in 2010, looking out forward, the World Expo is going to be held in Shanghai. So Shanghai is also doing a lot of build-up in anticipation of that. So just besides the sort of organic growth that would go on, there are some specific events that are really pushing the demand for resources and services. And we're benefiting from that clearly. By the way, the city that you see, this image that you see on the top left, that river there, is the Hongpu River. This is in Shanghai. The older part of Shanghai is where this picture was taken from. That over there is called Pudong. And if you had looked at that picture 10 to 12 years ago, you wouldn't have seen any buildings. So this has all happened very rapidly. That sort of space-looking building there with the tower is actually, it's a television tower. It's the Pearl television tower. So that's what that is. The building, the sort of shiny building in the middle, that tall building, Jinma Tower, it's an office building for the first 40 or so stories, 46, and then the next 40 is the Hyatt Hotel. It's the highest hotel, tallest hotel in the world. This is just sort of wrap up the how we did last year. You can see that we're up 12%, almost 13% over last year. Some of the highlights there. How about this year, the year we're in now? In terms of forecasting, we're expecting the results will be dependent on commodity prices. They're coming off their highs, in some cases record highs, either multi-year or all-time highs. So we probably won't see the gains in the mineral sector as we did in this past year. We expect continuing growth from China through 2008, probably really through 2010. Watch the dollar, a weaker dollar, you know, makes our U.S. exports relatively cheaper, which benefits us. So if you combine the positives and the negatives, I'm going way out on a limb. and predicting probably little or no growth next year. Probably will stay right around $4 billion for next year. That's our forecast for the year we're in now. A little bit about us as a Trade Center. Some of you have known us for many years and are familiar with us and our work, but the Trade Center is, this year we're actually celebrating our 20th anniversary. We were established in 1987. We're a private nonprofit organization. We're guided by an 18-member board of directors, and in the packets that you have there, you can see the list of our board of directors. The board reflects our membership in that you see representatives of the biggest companies in Alaska, whether it's FedEx or Wells Fargo or BP or companies like that. You also see board of directors coming from the smallest companies in Alaska and then companies in between. Our membership is made up of over 100 companies who are either involved in international business, are considering being involved in international business, or they provide services to those who are. I would say that sort of describes the three types of organizations that are members. Our mission is to help is simple. It's to help Alaskans to compete successfully for trade and investment in the global marketplace. We have a small staff, and I would say we have a big agenda. Our core functions are trade capacity. This is where we work with companies to become export ready. We work with companies who already have a product. We're not in, there's a lot of other groups that will help someone, you know, with business plans and getting their business started. There's SBA, there's a lot of groups, small business development centers. We work with companies who already have a product or service that's ready. But what they're doing now is wanting to go overseas. So we work with companies to make them export ready. One thing that we're doing, which is interesting and we hope will be beneficial over the long term, is trade development, where we're looking to find new markets for Alaskans' goods and services, new markets and new customers. In other words, some of those companies that are countries that we've done business with, Japan, Korea, China, Canada, are doing great, and they've been good to us for a long time. But there needs to be some work to find which will be the next Korea's for us. What country will be the next Japan for us? Who will be the next growth market? Where will it be? Will it be India? Will it be Singapore? Will it be Vietnam? You know, where will it be? And so we're doing a little bit of that work in terms of identifying countries whose import needs, really we're looking for the fast-growing economies whose import needs match up with our export capacity, with our capabilities. Countries that need what we have and whose economies are growing rapidly. It's worked well for us with Japan. It's worked well for us with Korea. It's worked very well and continues to work very well with China. But who's next? Someone has to be taking a look at that, and we're doing that. Trade service is the day-to-day work, the hands-on assistance that we do when we do work with people who want to export or are exporting. Trade facility, although we have a modest office in downtown Anchorage, we do have a conference room. And for some of our smaller companies who don't have their own facility, if they want to have meetings with out-of-town visitors or potential customers, they can use our conference room and appear bigger than they actually are. Trade network, our trade center is part of a network of about 300 trade centers in 78 different countries. Most Americans became aware of the World Trade Center and that concept on 9/11. 300, and we're arguably probably one of the smallest communities to have a World Trade Center. Most are in large metropolitan cities. These are four of our trade development programs. Japan Focus, this reflects the work that we do for companies who are interested in doing business in Japan, Korea, China. This has been our most active program in recent past 2 or 3 years. Has been our China Calling program. Under this program, we've taken trade missions to Shanghai and Beijing. We've conducted two, I would say, high-level business conferences in Anchorage, where we bring in experts, some of the top China business experts to Alaska, where they can talk about how to effectively do business in China, both the opportunities and the pitfalls. The New Markets, New Customers program is the work we're doing to find the next new markets, whether they're going to be niche markets or whether they're going to be major markets. It's the work to identify, to research, and find these new markets and new customers for our exporters. The Trade Center is a partnership. We enjoy a partnership for a number of years with the state of Alaska and with the U.S. Commercial Service, the U.S. Department of Commerce. So it's really, we're a unique entity in with our structure that as a private nonprofit that we can partner with the state government, with the U.S. government, and with the private sector and combine resources to have a stronger and we feel a very effective trade program. it's a partnership that's working. We'd like to expand upon that partnership and really combine the resources, financial resources, the talent, the capabilities of these three entities to build a strong trade program. And in conclusion, just to wrap up by saying that this is our 20th anniversary. We're looking forward to the next 20 years. And I want to thank you today for allowing us this opportunity to give a report on Alaska's international trade economy and to talk a little bit about the Trade Center. Would welcome and entertain any questions, Mr. Chairman, that you and the members may have.
I'd just like to say, last year when we were in China, Gus, what was his last name? The founder of the World Trade Organization.
Oh, Guy Tozzoli.
Guy Tozzoli. We met with him. He's 87 years old, or 88 now, maybe.
Yeah.
And good shape. And so he told us this story. When the towers went down, somebody found a box of his business cards in the rubbish, and they sold them on eBay for $25 a piece. So he gave us business cards. Me and Tom asked him to sign ours. We got two. Ours are signed, right?
Yeah, he said didn't think about it. You should have printed two more boxes.
Yeah.
Sold.
Yeah, yeah. But anyway, he may come to Alaska this year.
Right. We intend to invite the founder and the chairman of World Trade Center Association of these to come to Alaska for an event to highlight our 20th anniversary.
Yeah.
He's a fascinating gentleman with a long history of involvement with these trade centers.
Yes. Go ahead.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Thanks, Greg, for the presentation. And I haven't asked Bob Poe this question yet, and I keep thinking I need to. There was an interesting story in the paper, the Anchorage paper, about a week ago, where he had negotiated a deal with a group in China mm-hmm. to send seafood to China. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that caught my attention in the story was that the idea was we could send the raw resources to China. The cheap labor could process the resources, yep. and then it could be reimported into the United States. Yep. And so I will ask Bob, and I don't want to yep. put you on the spot, but it just seems to me that kind of trade ought to be discounted just a little bit, because I'm assuming that we have the potential of losing coastal jobs by that kind of export. I mean, is that common, or...?
Through the chair, Senator Elton, there are some companies that do, in fact, process Alaskan seafood in China currently.
In Thailand.
In other countries for re-export. Either, in some cases, it will be re-exported to elsewhere in Asia. For example, it could be processed in China and then sold into the Japanese market or one of the other markets. Or in some cases, it comes back to the United States, and you'll find it in your supermarkets. I think our interest lies with I think the sentiment of your question is we'd like to see that, and it's not just in the seafood realm, mm-hmm. but where there can be the value-added processing, where there can be some processing of our natural resources, whether it's like Agrium does by taking natural gas and turning it into fertilizer, or if it's a fish that's taken in the round and is processed or semi-processed here. Anything that we can do, or in metals, if there was a time in the future when some of the minerals or metals, there could be some sort of processing of those here in Alaska, where we can capture a larger percentage of the ultimate value of that export. When you're exporting it in the raw, you're getting about the smallest value for it, whatever it may be. And it's only when we can add value to it by some sort of processing that we can capture a larger share of the value. And it means the jobs here. It means a larger tax base here. It has a lot of positive aspects. That's what we would encourage.
To follow up, Mr. Yeah. Chair, I mean, the concern that I have, obviously, is that, their finished product done with cheaper labor competes against product that is actually processed here in state and shipped overseas. Mm-hmm. And so I do plan on asking Bob about it. I was just I want to know why, you know, I want to know more details, I guess, about that kind
of... You kind of get into that mix. When I first started going overseas, Japanese was doing all the work. They was making the shoes. Then they overpriced themselves, and it went to the Koreans and Taiwanese. And then they've all overpriced, so your Reeboks and stuff now are being made in China. And that's just the natural way.
Mr. Chair, it's going a step further. In talking with Chinese businessmen, they say, well, if you really want it done cheap, you should do it in Vietnam. Yes. So, yeah, that type of competitive advantage doesn't always last forever. As you can see, there's sort of an evolution in this. Going back to Senator Elton's comments, our interest, and this is sort of outside our purview. I mean, it's up to the companies where they decide to do their work. But certainly, to the extent that we can encourage and facilitate that work to be done here, where Alaskans have those jobs, that's certainly to our advantage on many levels.
I had a different question, but if you...
No, go ahead.
Just a real quick one, Greg. You noted the double-digit growth over the last 3 years. How much of that is due to the weakness of the dollar?
Through the chair, Senator Elton, some of that surely is. But I think if you had to dissect it to figure out what was the main cause of that growth, and I think it's been the increased demand from those emerging markets. Whether a country like India is buying it from us, if they're buying it from someone else, it also drives up the price of ours. Mm-hmm. In some cases, China actually is buying from us some of these things. But even what they don't buy from us, they buy from someone, and cumulatively it raises the price. And so long as that demand is forthcoming, that's going to be good for us. It's going to keep our resources that we have to sell in demand, and the prices that we realize for them when we sell them at a higher rate than the year before.
Great. Thanks, Greg. Thanks, Mr. Chairman.
Well over a decade ago, you know, for almost 30, 40 years, Alaska Pulp operated, Alaska Lumber and Pulp, depending on the iteration of the corporate structure. Mm-hmm. I would imagine they were fairly active in your organization. Is that correct? Or members of it, or do you remember?
Through the chair, Senator, they're not a member of our organization now. Whether they were 10 years ago, I can't say for sure. I was not the executive director at that time. We do have several companies that are involved in the forest products business that are members. Mm-hmm. One that's based here, for example, is Sea Alaska. They are exporting round logs overseas. They are a member of our organization.
So is there any, I guess you answered the next part of the question. I was going to ask if there's any remnants of George Ishiyama's conglomerate empire that is still.
Yeah, through the chair, Senator, I actually was at a function in Tokyo about 2 years ago. The group that he was very instrumental in forming and maintaining was a group called Alaska Kai. It's a group of blue chip Japanese companies whose purpose was to meet and to consider business opportunities with Alaska. This group was in existence from the early 60s, and Ishiyama was a chairman of that group for some number of years, and one of the big supporters of that organization there was the pulp companies, the pulp mills. I'm not sure of the status of his business entities today.
Any more?
No.
What about you? We last year we were invited by Greg to go to India, and due to various reasons, the special sessions and this and that, we didn't want to promise to be there and not could go.
So not to go.
They were supposed to have another meeting in India, and where else was it?
Singapore
and India.
Yep.
This year sometime. So I haven't talked to Greg at all about this, but
Chairman Cowdery, there'll be typically in a year we'll organize one or two major trade missions. Last year we took a group of 15 to Korea. The year before we took a group of about the same number to Shanghai and Beijing. There's interest by some of our members and others in doing the India trade mission. India today is not a significant customer of Alaska, but if you look, they've been sort of in the shadows of China. But their growth trajectory has been pretty impressive for the last 10 years. While China is growing at about 10% annually, India is growing about 8 or 9% annually. They both have over a billion people, and they both have enormous build-out ahead of them for their infrastructure. They also have a situation with a rising economy. They have rising expectations of their people, their citizens, and they'll increasingly have the money to spend on things that we have. So it could be that down the line in the future, India could be an important market for us. Singapore is a market of ours now. It's in the top 20. I think in the past I've done some work looking at seafood, for example, in that market. It's a market in Singapore where 70% of the people are ethnically Chinese. It has one of the highest per capita incomes in Asia. And they are very big seafood eaters, so these are people who have a propensity to have seafood 2 to 3 times a day in some form, whether it's soup or a fillet or whatnot. They have the incomes, the disposable incomes, to buy the best that the world has to offer seafood-wise. They have some of the top 5-star hotels who are also big customers of seafood. We have direct cargo. We can ship air fresh seafood from Alaska to Singapore. Singapore Airlines itself flies cargo planes through Anchorage, and there are other carriers. So it could be that would never be. It's a small nation, small island nation. They don't have the populations of a Japan or a Korea, but it could be a sort of lucrative niche market in that area. Singapore also has a big oil and gas industry in terms of refinery, and it could be that for some of our companies who are in the service sector, there could be some opportunities. I think some have already done some work in Singapore, but it's a very interesting market, and it's one of the ones that we're taking a look at.
One of the service companies in Alaska, Utahovin.
Yep. Utahovin.
Yeah, like the Vico, only smaller. Mm-hmm. They're in China, and when we were over there, we met. I don't know what his title was, but
he's their manager for China, yep, operations.
And he was from where? Louisiana?
Yeah.
And
lifetime in the oil and gas business.
We were driving around one afternoon, and we had a dinner, but we hadn't had lunch. He said, how about some lunch? What do you like to eat? Somebody says, how about some nachos or something? So he finds a Mexican restaurant. We wasn't very far from, run by some Texan people, and we had nachos and beer, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Just like if you was in Texas, and there was a lot of Americans there that owned businesses and stuff. It was very interesting.
A new topic, Mr. Chair. I was surprised on one of your slides, Greg, where we had exports of $143,000 to Spain, and Spain had a slice of that pie.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm working somewhat from memory here, in older history, but I mean, I thought Australia was a big market for canned salmon, and I thought that we were sending far more than 143,000. Are we missing some of our exports because they're transshipped through Washington State, for example, where they, yeah, they might catch a barge going south, and then we don't necessarily know that our salmon are being further exported on from Seattle, Seattle to Australia?
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Elton, it's actually 143 million. It's 100.
I'm sorry. Yeah. Oh, 143 million.
It's 143 okay. million.
We're not selling that much canned salmon.
Right. Okay. Right. I think traditionally, and I don't know if it's changed, but the UK has been the biggest buyer of our canned salmon products.
Are you able to track? Are you able to track that? I mean, if it leaves Alaska and is transshipped through Seattle, do you know where, you know, what the value is, yeah, going to other,
yeah,
countries?
Through the chair, Senator Elton, that's traditionally been a, I, 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 we believe, and I would say we know, that in seafood particularly, we don't get full credit. These numbers don't fully reflect the Alaskan exports. If they're caught in Alaskan waters and are shipped immediately to Seattle and are in a warehouse in Seattle, when they go to ship those overseas, the guy standing there will, where it says, where did this come from? He might just say Seattle, because he's standing in Seattle, and that's where the product is sitting. He might write Alaska. But we're confident, and we've been able to convince the U.S. Department of Commerce that that happens. And they've actually, there's a notation at the bottom of some of their statistics about Alaska that, in fact, it may not fully reflect. But just because of the nature of that business and where that occurs. With some of the other industries, I think it's pretty accurate. But in that case, it's probably underreporting. One final comment, if I could, Mr. Chairman. I mentioned at the beginning the export of services. You mentioned a company, an Alaskan company, Utilhoven, that received the winner last year of the Governor's Exporter of the Year Award for their business, not only in China,
yeah,
but in other overseas markets. You mentioned Vico. That's another company that does a considerable business overseas. And there are other Alaskan companies doing that. In an article that was published a year or two ago, I took a stab at how much those exports might be. I estimated on an annual basis, Alaskan exports of services is probably in the range of $500 million to $750 million. I came to that, and there's not a stack of papers that tells me that, but anecdotally, from talking to companies and knowing that one company that's well-known in Alaska does $250 million a year themselves, one company, I ventured an estimate of $500 million to $750 million. After that article was published, a couple of companies that I had referred to in the article, I was talking to them afterwards and some others, and they said, you probably underestimated. It's probably more than that. So it could be as large as $1 billion a year. I'm quite sure it's over $500 million. I don't think there's anyone who doubts that. So that's what's exciting about that. And for our future, is that's where we're exporting our know-how. For the students coming out of college, they don't necessarily have to work in a mine or on an oil rig. They can be working in the service sector side and still have a good paying job from Alaska as we find markets overseas for that. Most of those are homegrown companies. They're still headquartered here. Their key personnel are still here. In all the cases that I mentioned, their staff, their key people all live in Alaska. Their offices are here in Alaska. And that money ultimately flows back to Alaska. So that work that's being done overseas, it's an exciting sector. It's where we're exporting our know-how rather than just a commodity.
So why don't we do more trade with the Philippines?
Through the chair.
Particularly fish trade.
Yeah, Senator Stedman. I was just taking a look to see what we do with the Philippines. Right now they're ranked our 41st trading partner. It's varied. In some years, it's been as much as $4 or $5 million, which is not a lot when you're doing $4 billion in exports. Last year, it was under $1 million. One reason may be that no one has really looked at that market to see if there are things that we could sell them. All of the organizations, whether it's a company or an organization like ours, has limits to how many markets we can look at or know something about or be effective in. Just a limitation of manpower and resources. Could we do more in the Philippines? We've done more in the past than we're doing now. So I would say yes, it's possible. I don't know of any group that's actively looking at the Philippines right now.
Oh, a little over a year ago, some of us were at a several-day meeting in Anchorage on how mega projects are put together and what's problematic in them and makes them successful. One of the comments that was made at the meeting is they said that most likely all of the drafting and design drawings of the new gas line will be done in India.
Mm.
So in the event that that happens, would that show up on your import-export
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, no, it wouldn't. It's a service, number one, and we would, if we knew, if a company reported, actually, it wouldn't be an export at all if they're actually doing the work. If they're doing the work there, it wouldn't be characterized as an export. That's a sort of outsourcing of that particular work. No different than if they had their accounting done somewhere else. So it wouldn't. When a gas line project is realized, there's going to be a number of international companies that are involved, whether it's the steel for the pipe or whether it's the drawings. I don't know. I'm not in that industry, but there will be a lot of international involvement in a project of that size, and the nature of the equipment and materials needed. There will be a lot of international participation, I would imagine.
And isn't South Central Timber or whatever, is they're one of your organization members, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. And we just, a company from Ketchikan just joined us in the last week. They're a small value-added forest products company, and they've got a customer right now in Russia, and their problem was getting the product to them. We've had experience in getting products into Russia. We have Russian-speaking staff in our office. We have trained one of our staff is in the master's program at the university in global logistics management. So, and we have a number of our member companies are doing business in Russia. So we were able to help that company on the day after they joined.
They were Pacific Log?
Quite happy with it. It's a company called Alaska Forest Enterprises. It's in Ketchikan.
Well, we appreciate you coming and giving this to us. It's, I did everything. I've been kind of involved in international trade for a long time. In fact, I founded the offices of my legislation in 83, I think, in Taiwan and Korea. I've always had an interest in, some of my early, when I was working in the city, I think you were, I don't know where you was working then, but I got a bunch of small companies that wanted, couldn't afford, it's like Greg said, couldn't afford the trip over there or what. I remember there was a fishing company, and he had some widget that he had that had something to do with the, he wanted it cast, and he had to have it welded. Now it was out of aluminum, he had to have it, so he wanted casting, some company in casting. So I took this with us, and I think he paid $200 or something. We displayed it in business cards, and anyway, that's one of the things in a small thing. He did besides the big things, so I've been a fan of international trade for a long time. I haven't been to Japan in a while, but it was one of my first visits over there was in Japan.
Well, Mr. Chairman, one of the things that we can do as an organization, for example, you gave a very good example of being able to help a company that didn't have the resources to do that trip over there. If, for example, if we attend a trade show in one of our key markets, by us, say, renting a booth for our trade center, and then for a much smaller fee, seven or eight different companies can participate in that booth rather than them having to pay the full cost. They pay just a fraction of it. That type of coordinating and that type of work makes it more feasible for some of our small and medium-sized companies to get the word out about, to get over there either with us or have us do that for them in a much more cost-effective way than they could ever do it themselves. Yeah. And that's one of the types of things that we do.
And another program that we kind of come up with, maybe I did, but anyway, you pursued Discover Alaska. Why don't you explain that?
Sure, Mr. Chairman. Later this year, in the summer, we're planning to bring from Korea, from Japan, from China, and from Taiwan 10 mid-career executives from business and government in industries that are relevant to Alaska, and bring them here for about a 7-day I call it a business familiarization trip to see with their own eyes the major export industries of Alaska, to go to the North Slope and go to a seafood processing plant, go to a mine.
On a fishing boat.
Take go out on a boat.
Coal mine, the gold mine, everything.
Go to a, yeah. Have them see and experience what Alaska has to offer business-wise. They'll see some of our tourist sites along the way, but the focus of this is not that. The focus of this is to bring people so that they go back to Tokyo or to Seoul or Beijing or Taipei, knowing firsthand what Alaska has to offer, with the goal being that at such time, whether it's a month from now, a year from now, or 5 years from now, when a situation comes up where their company or their organization needs something that we can provide, they'll go, oh, they'll remember, aha, that's right, Alaska. I know they have that. I've seen that. And so they'll know what we have. And the extra benefit is that there'll be opportunities for them to meet their counterparts here. So they'll go back with a box full of name cards of people that they've met in those industries. So when a time comes to contact someone, they'll have a name, they'll have a phone number, they'll have seen it. And I've seen this work in other countries, and I think it's going to do us a lot of good. It's also, the reason why we're taking mid-career people is we don't want someone who's, say, the chairman of the company is going to retire next year. That probably won't help us much. And we don't want someone who just joined the company yesterday because they're probably not in a position to make any decisions. So we're really looking to focus on mid-career executives, you know, who are in companies or agencies that are relevant to Alaska, and get them familiar with us. I've seen it work in other situations, and I think it'll work wonders for us. When I think about it, and some of the people you know, you'll know who I'm talking about, even without mentioning their name, some of the pioneers that really got our trade going with Japan back in the 60s or with Korea in the 80s, some of these people have retired. They're no longer in public life or private life in terms of being activists. And the people that they knew and worked with over there are in the same situation. So this Discover Alaska program is part of getting the next generation of leaders in these markets familiar with Alaska, with what we have, and with people who they can interact with for the next 10 or 20 years here. So I think it's a very exciting program that we'll be doing. We're going to be working with different organizations here in Alaska, including the university, but we'll be working with private sector companies who will help us make these visits possible, whether it's into a plant of some kind or to the North Slope or whatnot. But we're real excited about it, and we think it's going to do a lot of good, and Senator Cowdery has helped make that possible. There's one other project that is sort of the flip side of that. It's called Display Alaska, and what we are installing on a one-year basis in Tokyo and Seoul and Taipei and Beijing is a light box, if you will. If you imagine walking through an airport and you see the large advertisements that are lit from behind in a box, these displays will talk about two aspects of Alaska. A great place to business and a great place to work. It'll have visual images of our major industries, visual images of our tourist attractions. In the middle is a letter from the governor, photo of the governor, the seal of Alaska. But it's something that will signs will be in a high traffic office buildings or convention center areas, where literally every day thousands of business people and others are walking by these. And the idea is that they see an image of Alaska that talks about as a place to do business, trade, for example, or invest, and they'll see an image of Alaska as a great place to visit. And then there are websites there as part of that where they can contact ATIA in the case of tourism. They can contact us in case of trying to find business people to work with here. But we think that'll be deliver a very positive business-focused message about Alaska in these markets.
Tell them about China Air when you went.
Right. When we talked to China Airlines in Taipei, the major carrier from Taiwan, who is the only international carrier at this point that provides direct year-round service between Asia and Alaska. When they go from Taipei to Anchorage round trip, 3 days a week. When they saw this, I was working with their marketing department, and the conversation evolved to, well, could we be part of this? Could we help with this project? And as the conversation worked out, since they're the airline that flies to and from Taipei, if they could have their logo there and their little website where people can go and buy their, find out how to get to Alaska and maybe even reserve their seat, that seems to be sort of the next step where someone can walk by this, see this beautiful image of Alaska and say, I want to go there, but how do I go there? And then they see the airline and they see the website and they go online and can do it. So that will help sponsor these types of signs, but also it gives people a way of acting upon the positive image that they've just seen.
The World Trade Center in Taipei is one of the major ones that I've been in.
That's right.
And I don't know how many floors that, 10 floors?
The building is actually much taller than that, but the area of the convention center and the exhibitions is at least 10 stories.
But you can rent, or you could put like the video postcards of Alaska. You could rent a little screen here and there in that thing. It runs 24 hours a day. One DVD, the next one, just to excite people to see why us old guys are up here. But
us old guys, you're the one that had the birthday.
Yeah, I know. But I'm younger than most of you guys. But anyway, I wanted Greg to come down and show you guys whatever, and I'll be a little bit more active in this year than I have been in the past. So, Greg, we appreciate it. Well, stop by the office and we'll talk about other things.
Thank you. Thank you, and thank the committee members for taking time to be here today and to listen to the presentation. Any questions that come up later, please feel free to contact us. Thank you very much.
Okay.